So Rabotai, we're here on Daf Kuf Vav on the base. And we're mamish at the end of the Amud, three lines up from the bottom. We gave an introduction to this on Tuesday, but let's now get into the sugya. Amar Abchiya Bar Abba Rabbi Yochanan. So the names here are a bit important, because there's going to be a machlokas here between Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba and Rabbi Chiya Bar Yosef. So just to avoid these two Rabbi Chiyas that gets a little confusing, we'll call it Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Chiya. Because the first statement was transmitted in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Now, in order to appreciate what's going on here, we really should take out a chumash. I meant to bring in a chumash, of course, I forgot to do so. In the parasha, do you have a chumash? Thanks so much. It's always good to see the psukim inside, because in this particular sugya, the way that you read the psukim is critical. And we're looking at the parasha of Shomrim, and make a note of it, this parasha is the parasha that we read last Shabbos, Shmos Chaf Beis. So we're going to look in Shmos Chaf Beis, and the case is that there's a mafkid and a shomer. And the shomer is denying something. We're not sure exactly what he's denying. Is he denying that he's chayev, meaning through circumstances beyond his control, he's not able to return the object? Is he denying that he ever got the object? Perhaps he's claiming that he returned the object. There are so many different claims that the shomer could make. And the Torah actually doesn't specify when the Torah establishes that he has to take a shvua, that the shomer is chayev in a shvua. The Torah doesn't specify exactly what his claim was. Is it any claim that he comes up with, any counter claim against the mafkid that would be mechayev in a shvua, or is it only specific type of a claim? There's one phrase in the Torah that has five words to it, and we have to understand what that phrase means if we want to single out and identify what exactly was the claim of the shomer for which he's chayv to take a shvua. So the Torah says as follows. I'm reading for you the pasuk in Shmos Chaf Beis, pasuk Zayin, and in that pasuk the Torah speaks about a shvua on the part of the shomer. And it says, V'nikra Baal Bayis El Elohim, and that's a reference to shvua. Now, there's another part of this pasuk which is going to come up in the sugya a little bit later on today, Mirtz Hashem, and that is in Lo Shalach Yodo B'Meleches Re'eh. In other words, that there was no Shlichus Yad B'Pikadon. So whatever that means, we'll get to later. Let's just sort it all out step by step so we don't get too confused with too many variables at once. Okay, now what is the content of the Shomer's claim for which his Vinikrav, he has to take a Shvur? So the Torah says in Pasuk Ches that he has to take a Shvur because he says, Asher Yomar Ki Hu Zeh. That's a strange, a kind of ambiguous phrase. So what does it mean, Asher Yomar Ki Hu Zeh? And that's the precondition to the Chiyuv Shvua that's incumbent upon the Shomer. So we're going to look at Rabbi Yochanan first. Om Rabbi Chiyo Bar Abom Rabbi Yochanan Hatoen Tainas Ganov B'Pikadon. If the Shomer says, you know what, you gave me the cow, but it was stolen, and I don't have to pay you because it was stolen. Let's assume we're talking about a Shomer Chinam. That's the easiest case. Says Rabbi Yochanan, does he have to take a Shvua to support his claim, the Shomer's claim that it was stolen? Eino Chayav. He doesn't have to take the Shvua. This is the way most Rishonim learn the sugya. There's going to be another Shita called the Tosas Arid, which Amir Tzshem will get to a little bit later, but right now we're explaining the way most Rishonim learn. And Rabbi Yochanan is saying that in the general case of a taina, where the shomer claims I'm potter because although I received the cow, but the cow is gone through no fault of my own, he does not have to take a shvuah. That's very interesting. You would think that once he admits that he received the cow, that sort of bolsters or strengthens the claim of the plaintiff, of the mafkid, and the mafkid is saying, wait a minute, you took my cow, I gave it to you, I deposited you, you were meant to protect it, you took responsibility, you didn't return it. If you didn't return it, then at least placate me with a shvua, you know, that I know that it was not any fault of your own, there was no negligence here. But no, Rabbi Yochanan says, I cannot accept that. Why? And we're going to soon see, because of this pasuk that's very ambiguous, five words that we mentioned before. So under what circumstances does the Torah say, Ad Elohim Yavod Dvar Shnehem, that they do have to take, that the Shomer does have to take a shvua? Ad sheyichpar b'miktas v'yodeh b'miktas. We'll explain this in just a second, but where does Rabbi Yochanan draw this very strange, very odd conclusion that as a general rule, the Shomer would not have to take a shvua? We're going to whittle down the shvua to one specific scenario, one specific case. My timer, where did he get this from? The Omar Kra, because the Torah says, Ki hu zeh. And the beginning of that pasuk is Asher Yomar Ki hu zeh. And then the next part of the pasuk is Ad Elohim Yavod Dvar Shnehem. So what does Rabbi Yochanan see in this pasuk Asher Yomar Ki hu zeh? It's almost as if he's saying, you know what? I admit that something that you claim against me is valid, but Ki hu zeh, it's not as great as you make it out to be. In other words, you're claiming a bombastic, a very expansive amount. I can only agree to part of that, but it's not the entire, your entire claim, your total claim is not well balanced, is not well founded, but rather part of your claim is well founded. In the language of Rabbi Yochanan, that's called Ad sheyichpar b'miktas v'yodeh b'miktas. So Rashi and the Rishonim say the following. There were three cows, and the mafkid is claiming that the shomer has to return to him three cows. The shomer is kofer on one cow. He says, I never received three cows, I only received two cows. That's called a kfira. That's called a kfira b'miktas. On the other hand, v'yoda b'miktas, he admits that he's chayev to return one of the three cows. So there's a kfira on one cow, a hoda on another cow. Regarding the third cow, he says that was stolen. In such a case, he has to take a shvua. Basically, he's going to take a shvua on two out of the three cows. One cow, he's going to take a shvua to the effect that he never received it to begin with. On another cow, he's going to take a shvua that it was stolen from him through no fault of his own. And on the third cow, he's going to have to pay for that cow or return that cow. So we have basically, in the shomer's claim, three elements. One element is a kfira, the other element is a hodah, and the third element is what we call a tainas ptur. Tainas ptur means, yes, I admit that I received the cow, I'm not denying that as a kfira, but I'm not going to claim that I have to pay you for the cow because I have a ptur. What's my ptur? My ptur is gneva. That's called ki hu zeh. But if the shomer simply says, I don't owe you anything because whatever you gave me was stolen, he doesn't have to support that claim with a shvuah. Because the Torah was not machayev him a shvuah shomrim unless there was three elements, the kfir of a miktas, the hodah of a miktas, meaning there's one part of your claim that I deny, I never even received that cow. There's another part of your claim that I admit that I'm chayav for. And on the third cow, there's a tainus ptur. In this case, he claims it was stolen. Then and only then does he have to take a shvuah. Whose shita is this? Again, we have to remember the name. Rabbi Yochanan. Upliga, but this Rabbi Yochanan is against Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef. Now, if Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef is going to reject Rabbi Yochanan, then he's going to have to come up with a different interpretation of Ad Ashayomar ki hu zeh. Okay, so the key to the sugya is ki hu zeh. And what is Rav Chiya's interpretation of ki hu zeh? Here we move on to Kuf Zayin Amud Aleph. Eruv Parshios Ksiv Ka. What this means is, according to Rashi at least, there's a long, long Tosis here, but Rashi tells us that according to Rav Chiya, these words, Asher Yomar Ki Hu Zeh, do not belong here. They belong to the parsha of Malva and Lova, which means that Reuven claims that he lent Shimon a certain sum of money, and Shimon denies that claim and he has to take a Shavuah. What does it mean he denies that claim? Well, there are two possibilities. It might be he denies the entire claim, in which case he says, I never got a penny from you. Or it might mean that he admits, he confesses on part of the claim and denies the rest of the claim. The Torah goes out of its way to say, Asher Yomar Ki Hu Zeh, I mean, it's not the way you claim, but it's rather this way, as if to say that I deny part of your claim, but I admit to the other part of the claim. And in such case, the Lova has to take a Shvuah, which is called what? How do we call that Shvuah, Rabosai? When the Lova says, I did borrow...
Modem.
Right, that's called Modem Miktas. So then, according to Rabbi Chiya's reading of the Parsha, since he's applying the principle of Eruv Parshios Ksiv Kan, this part of the Pasuk is referring not to the Shomer case, but rather to the Halva case, the Milva case. In the case of the Milva, the Lova, as a counterclaim against the Malva, would only be Chayav Shvua to support his claim against the Malva if and when he was Modem Miktas. That's called Ki Hu Zeh. But in the case of a Shomer, says Rashi, according to Rabbi Chiya, the Shvua is imposed upon the Shofer, on the Shomer, even though he's a Kofra Kol.
But the Pasuk says, I'll call Aveda. How can it be referring to...
I'll call Aveda is referring to the Shomer. Right, yes, that's where the Shomer claims exactly. That it was lost. But the next part of the Pasuk, which says, Asher Yomar Ki Hu Zeh, Adalim Yavo Bashneim, that's already... Erev Parshios, that's not referring to the Shomer, that's referring to Alva.
You mean a part of the Pasuk
right.
is
a part of the Pasuk belongs to a different Parsh. Okay, that's called Erev Parshios Ksivka. In any event, this is Rashi's Pshat. However, so let's just summarize, before we go on to Tosus, let's just summarize Rashi's Pshat. Rashi's Pshat is that there's a very extreme machlokas here between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Chiya. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan says that a Shomer does not have to take a Shvua unless we have Asher Yomar Ki Hu Zeh, which means there's going to be an element of a Kfira, an element of a Hodah, and a Tainus Ptur. According to Rabbi Chiya, there's an absolute Chiyuv on a Shomer to take a Shvua, even if he's just putting forward a Tainus Ptur without any Hodah whatsoever. That's the way Rashi learns the sugya. Now, this gigantic Tosfos is divided up into three parts. The first part is a presentation of Rashi Shita, with a number of objections to Rashi. The second part, which begins on the wide lines about line number 6 or 7, is Rabbeinu Tam, a first Rabbeinu Tam. And the third part of Tosfos, which is, I guess, about 15 lines up from the bottom of the page, is Venera Kepirish Riva. At the end of the day, after Tosus weighs all the proofs this way and that way, for Rashi, against Rashi, for Rabbeinu Tam, against Rabbeinu Tam, he finally embraces the Shita of the Riva. And he believes that the Riva is the most logical approach to this sugya. So what I'd like to try to do now is, to some extent, again, we're not going to learn the whole Tosus, but at least to present to you the Shita of the Riva, and to see why the Riva Shita here is very exciting. it really introduces an answer to the question as to when the Shomer should be taking a Shvuah, when he should not be taking a Shvuah. And basically the reverse says the following. As far as Rabbi Yochanan is concerned, which is the first opinion, and Gemara says the Riva, the Shomer is Chayev a Shvuas HaShomrim because he was Moda B'miktas. And the reason for that is that only when there's a Hodah B'miktas, then says Rabbi Yochanan, is the claim of the Toveah, in this case the Mafkid, a solid claim. Meaning, if the Shomer denies everything, then the Mafkid put forth a claim. He has no Eidim to support that claim. He doesn't even have a Hodah, even B'miktas, on the part of the Nitba, the defendant, the Shomer, to support his claim. Without any support to his claim, he's not able to convince Beis Din that his claim is strong enough to require a counter power, so to speak, of a Shvuah. However, if the Shomer is Modeh B'miktas, he admits that he does have to pay part of the claim, that makes the claim as a general claim into a Tviyah Chashuvah, a very strong claim, because he admits, the Shomer, that part of the claim is true. Once the Shomer has now, as a Nitba, strengthened the power of the claim of the Toveah, then the Toveah can demand a Shvuah to counter his claim. His claim is not just a claim. You know, I can walk into Beis Din and claim against anybody. Therefore, that person has to take a Shvuah. No. He's a Kofra Kol. He says, I don't know you. I've never had any dealings with you. So just because so-and-so is Mechadish a Tvi against you, therefore the other person has to take a Shvuah. You know, Shvuah is a very serious matter. Says Rabbi Yochanan, when does the Torah require a Shvuah? And this is true for both Milveh and for Shomer, it's only when there was a bit of an evidence to support the claim of the Toveah. And what was that evidence? Hodah B'miktas. It's not just that I picked you up off the street and I said to you, buddy, I want to sue you for $100. You know, no, it's not. You yourself admit that you owe me some sum of money, whether it's 50 or 100, okay, that's a major dispute between the Toveah and the Nitba, but at least the Nitba strengthens and bolsters the claim of the Toveah. Then we get to Rav Chiya. And Rav Chiya says the following. While it's true that the Mafkid has a certain power and a certain credibility in his claim, that should, in and of itself, be Mechayev a Shvuah, so that the Shomer should be taking a Shvuah. However, he says there's another element here, another variable that has to be added to the equation. And that is that the Nitba, the Shomer, also has something to support his claim. The defendant could support his claim. Which I'll explain in just a minute. And if the defendant can support his claim, then he exempts himself from a Shvuah. Now, what is this support that the Nitba, that the Shomer, brings to his claim? Says the Riva, Ein Adam Meiz Likvar Bifnei Adam Hamakir B'Shikra. The Riva says that we have a principle which gives the kfira of the Shomer, the denial of the Shomer, a certain extra power or support to it, which is going to ultimately kick in to exempt him from a Shvuah. What is that principle that serves as evidence, so to speak, to support the counterclaim of the defendant of the Shomer? That's called Ein Adam Meiz Likfar Bifnei Adam Shemakir B'Shikro. Okay, what does this mean? When a Shomer denies payment, that itself, that denial, could fall under one of two major categories. Okay, so if we had a flow chart here, we would have the Tainas HaShomer, And under the Tainas HaShomer, which is our heading, we have two roads that diverge, okay? One of them is called a Kfira Gemura, and the other is called a Tainas Ptur. What's a Kfira Gemura? So even that divides into two categories, but they're both the same. A Kfira Gemura could mean either that the Shomer says, I never got a cow from you, or I return the cow to you. In both of those cases, there is a support, says Rav Chiya, to the claim of the Shomer, because in both those claims, the mafkid is makir b'shikro. In other words, the psychology here is, although I think it goes beyond psychology, but that you can't look someone in the face who knows that you're lying and just simply, you know, most people can't lie with a straight face in front of the person that knows that they're lying and is claiming against them. You know you gave me a cow. You know I didn't return your cow. If I have the chutzpah, the ha'azaz panim, to deny that I ever got the cow or to claim that I returned the cow in front of your face, I must be telling the truth. Not must, but at least there's a good chance, and that weighs in as evidence. Therefore, in such a case, despite the fact that there may be some support and evidence weighing in on behalf of the Tovea, and that in and of itself should generate a shvua on the Shomer's part, but nevertheless, since the Shomer can adduce this evidence, again, it's not that he says it in the courtroom, but the halacha, you know, proposes, you know, presents that evidence on his behalf, namely that he couldn't be kofer. He must be telling the truth. Therefore, he's potter from a shvur. That's called a kfira gemura.
There's no difference between...
Wait, just give me one more second and then we'll finish. Okay. However, there's another claim of the shomer, which is not a kfira gemura. And that is nenas or nignav, that yes, I took the cow from you, no, I didn't return the cow to you, but I'm potter. That's called a tainis ptur. In such a case, ein habaldavar, in this case, ein hamafkid makir b'shikro. The mafkid has no way of knowing whether indeed the cow was stolen or it wasn't stolen. Did the cow break a leg or did it not break a leg? Was it hit by lightning or it had a heart attack or it was not? In such a case, we go back to square one, our original premise. And that is the very fact that the Shomer admits that he received the cow, that he didn't return the cow, all that supports the claim of the Mafkid. And that makes the Mafkid's claim into not just some stam claim off the street, but into a Taina Chashuva. And once it's a Taina Chashuva, it generates a Chiyuv Shvua. What are you going to say? I have an evidence on behalf of the Shomer because... how could he lie in the face of the mafkid? The answer is he could lie in the face of the mafkid. It's no skin off his back because he knows that the mafkid has no idea, has no knowledge one way or the other. And therefore, that whole svara to support the counterclaim of the shomer that ain't on them kofik bifnei baldin shemakir b'shikro, which doesn't apply in the case of a tainis p'tur, falls off. And therefore, we go back to the original evidence, which weighs in on behalf of the mafkid. The mafkid didn't just tap someone on the back and say, "Hey, you owe me a cow," you know, and I could be mechayev everyone in the world the shvua because every day, if I'm very, well, what's that word in English? Litigious. What's the word?
Litigious.
I don't know how to pronounce
litigious.
Litigious. If I'm a very litigious guy, then every mutig and darnish that, you know, with the Bezdin sits on Monday and Thursday, I'll come into Bezdin and decide on another victim, you know, and I'll say he owes me $1 million. Let him take a shvua to count. No, there is some evidence that weighs in on behalf of the mafkid, so that according to Rav Chiya, based on that evidence, there should be a shvua. Even though there's no mode of emiktsas, in other words, according to Rav Chiya, it's impossible. Rav Chiya logically could not accept the sheet of Rav Yochanan. Why? Because Rav Yochanan is saying that in order to generate a shvua on the shomer, there's got to be a hodah, there's got to be a kfira, and so forth and so on. Kiyuzeh. That's something that Rav Chiya finds intolerable. Why should there be a kiyuzeh? The very fact that the Shomer himself admits that he took the cow, he was responsible for the cow, he never returned the cow, that itself should be Machayev HaShvua. and therefore you cannot take ki hu zeh literally. Ah, then what are we going to do with the ki hu zeh? Says the Rav Chiya, the ki hu zeh is going to apply when there's a very strong evidence weighing in on behalf of the shomer. Now, let's just fast forward for a minute to the case of the lova. Why is the lova potter from a shvua? And the answer is there's a very strong evidence that weighs in on behalf of the lova as well. Namely, how could the lova have received $1,000 as the malva claims and just look him in the face and deny it? Ah, that evidence, as we'll soon see, only weighs in the case where he was kofra kol. But if he wants to calm himself down about lying in the face of the malva, he could be modem emiktas. That's called ishtamutik amishtamit. And in such a case, he can live with the fact that the malva knows he's lying, and we're going to get to ishtamutik amishtamit in just a minute. Comes along Rav Chiya, and he says that structure, which the Torah created in the case of halva, is Eruv Parshios Ksivkan. We have to integrate it into the Parsh of Shomer as well. And just like in the case of Halva, there's the Kofra Kol, where we apply the principle Eino Demei is part of Ifnei Bal Chov, and that supports the counterclaim of the Lova, and therefore he's part of from a Shvua. But in a case where he's Modem Mikzas, we don't have the Eino Demei is part of Ifnei Bal Chov. In the absence of that support and evidence to the claim of the Lova, and the Lova will have to take a Shvua, and that's called Modem Mikzas. So too, although we don't need modem emiktas in the case of Shomrim, because the very fact that the person was called upon and by his own admission took it upon himself to supervise a deposit that was put in his keeping, that itself is enough to bolster the claim of the malva and therefore should require a shvua to the nishpa of the Shomer. However, just like in the case of Halva, we saw that the Torah exempts the lover from a shvua once he has the principle of Ein Adam Meir. So too, in the case of a shomer, when he denies that he received the cow, which is called Kofra Kol in the parallel case of the lover, or he claims he returned the cow, there too, the shomer, like in the case of the lover, has a support weighing in on behalf of his claim, because it would be a tremendous ha'azas panim for him to lie while he looks at the face of whom? Of the mafkid, and says, well, I never got the cow from you, or I returned the cow from you. However, it's very comfortable, or relatively very comfortable, for the shomer to put forth a tainus p'tur of, for example, nignav or nenas, because he knows that the mafkid does not in any way sense that he's lying, and therefore he's not looking him in the face with a blatant lie that the mafkid knows, that he recognizes. In such a case, lacking the evidence of ha'aza, we go back to square one, which is the assumption, even though he's not admitting that he owes a red cent to the malva, to the mafkid, nevertheless the shomer has to take a shmur. Okay then? So again, did anybody follow what I said, even on a superficial level?
Everything.
Oh, you did follow me?
Yeah, but I just have a question.
But I didn't say this. I mean, this is the riva, you know. I don't know. You know, it looks like you're sharpening the knives over there. I'm not willing to take the rap for it.
No, it just seems that
I'm just trying to make a case for the riva, and Tosis actually finds the riva very attractive, and I think. I think the reason why, there are two reasons why Tosis, I think, embraces the Riva after his analysis of Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. One reason is because the Riva is going to create for us a parallel between the concept of Modem Mikzas, or Kofra Kol, those two concepts with regard to Halva, and their parallel in the case of a Shomer and a Mafkid. That's one great advantage of the Riva. And the other great advantage of the Riva is that the Riva, by splitting the claims of the Shomer into two distinct categories, he's got the advantage of applying the yardstick of why should the Shomer be exempt from a Shvua. and applying the yardstick of Ein Adam Meis Likvar, etc. He gives the Shomer, in those cases where there was a total kvira, a support to his claim, which the Torah figures out, you know, and calculates it in the whole cholent, this whole situation. There's no need to, there's no push to require that the Shomer take a shvua. Those are two great advantages of the Riva. Go ahead.
I think there's a huge difference. You talked about anybody could go up to somebody and say, I gave you a cow, return it. And, you know, you just say, what are you talking about? And he can't make you make a shvua. That's one case. But if he says, yes, I did, you equated somebody who says, I never borrowed it, with somebody who says, yes, I borrowed it and I returned it. There's a huge difference there. Because in the first case, you know, what's going to do with me? I don't know what you're talking about. Second case is, he's already admitting he actually had the cow.
Or right. Saying, and that's why the Riva is forced to introduce this concept of Ha'azaz Panim. The Riva wants to understand, why is it that according to Rav Chiya, if the Shomer denies the entire claim, he will still have to take a Shvua, correct? And the answer is, because it's not just Stama claim. It's a claim with... just 1 second, I'm sorry. Did I say that wrong?
You did.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Again, in the case of Toi Tainas Ptur, then according to Rav Chiya, then he takes the shvur. Correct, he takes the shvur. Yeah. Sorry.
Well, he says,
okay, I need a blackboard here. Then he takes the shvur. But if he denies, the very cow, meaning not what happened to the cow, but the cow itself, then he does not have to take a shvur. Why? Why doesn't he have to take a shvur? And the answer is, says the Riva, because we have to introduce a proof to support the claim of the Shomer. What's the proof? Ain't other maids.
Right. Yeah, but that's, you see, he's only kind of looking at one side of the coin, is the problem. I mean, it's a very good analysis, but what I mean to say by that is that it's true that there was a reason to believe the Nitan, because he has punning when he's kofar akol. But if the kfira is by saying paraiti, then you have to look at the other side too, which is, why would a person be towing from somebody for no reason at all? Why you wouldn't believe it? Why would you believe somebody walks up to somebody and says you owe money? But if the other person already shows that there is some logic to the claim, because
some basis,
variety, or hishavti, then that's not the same as saying lo you had dvorim me'oilam.
Correct, but again, as I said before, the Riva says that against that support for the claim of the is another
weak. Hazos Panim is a weaker one when he says Hashavti or Paraiti than it is.
Correct. Again, you have to, everything has to be weighed, you know, in a very sensitive balance here. There's so many different variables.
Right.
But according to the Riva, according to the Riva, whether or not the Shomer should take the Shvua or not take the Shvua, it all boils down, according to the Riva in Rav Chiya, to one question. Is there some he'oza in the claim of the Shomer? And it works, it's counterintuitive in a sense. If there is a ha'oza in the claim of the Shomer, then there's no Shvua. You know, that's where you can get messed up. But if on the other hand there's no he'oza, because he doesn't know the difference, what does he know about Gneva and Ones? Then he has to take the shvua. So at least what the Riva is giving us here, and that's what I'd like you to appreciate, is a structure, a logical structure, as to the answer to the question, when and why should or should not the Shomer take a shvua. And he's divided up the claims into two categories. And therefore what we're looking for in the Erev Parshios is a kind of situation in which we have a similarity to halva, where the Torah says in the case of the lover, that if the lover was meis panav by denying the claim and saying to the malv, I don't owe you a penny, he is parted from a shvua because of the ha'azah that supports him. Again, the counterintuitive ha'azah. Yeah, you would think ha'azah is a reason to patch him, but here the ha'azah is a reason to believe him, because he wouldn't be meis and he must be telling the truth. comes along the Rivai, he says that's what Rav Chiya is looking for in this Erev Parashias. He's looking for something parallel in the case of Shomer, where once again we could alleviate the Shomer of his Chiyav Shvuah because of the Ein Adam Meis, because he wouldn't be Meis. And when are we going to go ahead and do that? When he looks in the face of the Mafkid and he tells the Mafkid something, which the Mafkid is laughing at him. You no good lawyer. How can you say that to me in my face? That's the Ein Adam Meis. And if Bechalzot, nevertheless, the Shomer put forth that claim, knowing full well that the Malva is looking in his eyes, the Mafkid, excuse me, and knows that he's lying, in such a case he must be telling the truth. Again, not must be, but there's evidence in that favor, and that's similar to the case of Kofra Kol in Halva. That's the Erev Parashios according to the Riva. Now again, if we had another hour, which I don't have right now, we would study Rabbeinu Tam. I'll just tell you the following, that Rabbeinu Tam understands Rabbi Yochanan in a totally different way. According to Rabbeinu Tam, Rabbi Yochanan holds that when the Shomer puts forth the tide of Nenas, then he's not chayav a shvuah, unless there was some sort of kfira gemura. He has to absolutely deny part of the claim, right? And what does that mean? Says Rabbeinu Tam, shemakhish shehufkad biyado chelek me'apikadon. In other words, the pikadon is that which the mafkid is claiming. Let's call it, you know, X number of cows. With regard to one of those cows, the Shomer is completely makhish be hakhosha gemura. And that itself, the hakhosha gemura, is going to generate a shvur. So it's really the opposite of the Riva. Whereas in the Riva, the hakhosha gemura is what exempts the Shomer from his shvur. And why is that? Because of the svara that the Riva gives. In the frame of reference of Rabbeinu Tam, the Hakhosha Gemura is a reason why we should be Machayev HaShvuah. Or for example, if the Shomer claims not that I didn't get that third cow, but that I returned that third cow, that too is Hakhosha Gemura. And once it's Hakhosha Gemura, then on the Tainas Ones, he's got to take a Shvuah. So it's not the Tainas Ones per se that generates the Shvuah. That's true in the case of the Riva. But in the case of Rabbeinu Tam, as opposed to the Tainas Ptur of Ones, or Gneva, whatever it might be, it's the Kfira Gemura, which means I returned to you that cow, or I never got that cow from you. That generates a Shvua on the one cow that he claims was on.
That's only because of the other two. That's only because it's linked to the other two.
Correct. But again, the key of keys here, according to Rabbi Yochanan, in Rabbeinu Tam's frame of reference, is the Kfira Gemura. That's what sets into motion the Chiyuv Shvuah. What is Rav Chiya, according to Rabbeinu Tam? I'll just mention this in passing. Again, we would need a lot of time to study Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says that according to Rav Chiya, the Tainas Nensu, or Gnevo, whatever the Tainas Pur is, that itself is Machayev Shvuah. All you need is some sort of Hodah B'miktas, but you don't need a Kfira Gemura. So again, the basic machlokas here, according to Rabbeinu Tam, between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Chiya, is what generates the Shvuah. Is it the Kfira Gemura that's going to generate the Shvuah on the Tainas Ones, or the Tainas Ones is going to generate the Shvuah in and of itself, just that you need a Hodav Mikta?
So when somebody says,
that's all we're going to do for now, okay? Right. I just want to get into the Sugya, all right? Okay. So the Gemara asks, "Umaishna milve?" And why is it that in the case of milve,
I answered that.
The Torah says, "Okay, no, it's just the limit." I'm sorry. Why is it in the case of milve, as opposed to pikadon, we say that the love is going to be potter from a shvua when he's kofar hakol, and dafka when he's modem miktas, then he has to take a shvua. In other words, Bishleim, according to Rabbi Yochanan was of the opinion that the parsha of Modu Miksas applies even to Pikadon, even to a Shomer. And the Modu Miksas is what generates the Shvua. Then we have a perfect consistency between Milve, where Modu Miksas is Chayav Shvua, and Pikadon, where the Shomer is Chayav Shvua also for Modu Miksas. But if we go with the shita of Rabbi Chiya is saying no. In the case of milveh, we require a mode of a mikzas in order to generate the shvua. But in the case of shomer, who says, I don't have to pay you anything because it was nenas, or because it was a ganov, he has to take the shvua. There's something about milveh that the Torah required ki huzeh, the mode of a mikzas, in a very unique way in order to generate the shvua. Why? What is so unique about milveh that the mode of a mikzas is what generates the shvua? And the Gemara answers, ki the rabba, di omar rabba, mipnei ma omre Torah mode of mikzas atayni yishava. Why is it that if a person denies the entire claim, in the case of halva, he's parted from the shvua? But if and only if he admits to part of the claim, does he have to take the shvua? The answer is, ein adam meis panim mipnei bal chovo. That when a person denies the entire claim, and he's saying to the malveh, who he knows pretty well, has given him alva, he's saying, no, you never let me ascend. How can he say such a thing? That's such a great ha'azus ponim. He must be telling the truth. And that supports his claim.
He never lent him, and or he paid him back completely?
And or he played him back, correct. Because that also would be a tremendous ha'azus ponim to look at the malveh who extended a halva to you and say, I don't owe you anything because I paid you back. What a terrible ha'azah that would be. It must be that he's telling the truth.
But
admitting
to half
a line
is also the same
amount. Wait a minute, hold on. This is shtamute. Yechiel, you're not familiar with the shtamute called shtamit?
Apparently not.
That's such a famous Gemara. It's in Bava Metzia, that's Beis of an Aleph. It's like the first sugya we learned when we were in fourth grade. It's Ishtabuti Kam Ishtabit. Not that I understand it. But I'll tell you what. Okay. So what's Ishtabuti Kam Ishtabit? Oh. So the Gemara says, Vahai, this love, Bekule boy dinichpere. He really wants to deny the entire halva. Okay. He really wants to do that. But, you know, to look at the malveh in the face and deny it, or say he returned it, that he can't do. That would be a tremendous ha'azus pun. So v'hai de lo kafrei, so he can't just shove, you know, brush off the malveh and say to him, go fly a kite, I don't know you, I returned the money, you know, maybe a decade ago I borrowed money, but since then I paid you back. That he doesn't have the chutzpah to do. Mishum de'eno the me'ez panov. He can't lie in front of the balchov who extended a loan to him. So therefore, since if he claims kofra kol, if he denies the entire claim, right, he has the support of Eino the Meis, it must be that he's telling the truth. Okay, so what happens now? Now we have a situation where perhaps the lova wants to figure this all out. He doesn't want to admit to the entire sum because he doesn't have that kind of money to pay him back. On the other hand, he can't be made as pun of in front of the malveh. So he comes up with a half-baked lie. Bekule boy deludile. In truth, if everything was equal, if he had the money in the bank, he would certainly admit he's not a no good liar and a cheat and going to take money that was lent to him and not pay back that money. No, that's not what the Torah is worried about. The Torah is worried about a person who really, really in the heart of hearts, he wants to confess, he wants to admit that he owes this halva. But hide the kafale. Why is he denying half of the halva, the miksas? So far he thinks, imo dinale bekule, if I'll admit, which I really should, the entire sum, tavale bekule, I'll have to pay him up the entire sum. I don't have that money in the bank. I'm going to have to borrow it in order to pay back a loan. Or maybe I'll have to give up my house and my property. So you know what? Ishtamutili miyahashta. Right now, I'm going to sort of be mishtamit. Mishtamit means I'll avoid him a little bit. I'll whittle down and cut down the damage. So what will I do? Ada havali zuzi aprini. Let me give myself a little bit of a leniency of time until I get the money to pay him back. I'll admit half of it, so I'm not made as pun of, and I'll only have to pay up half the loan, and I'll be able to slowly but surely gather together the rest of the loan. But the Torah's not going to let him get away with such a lie, because the Torah's not going to trust him to eventually pay up the other loan.
Does he not know that?
Oh, I don't know. You're a step ahead of me. Let me just get to the logic. Hilchah. So what does this what does the Torah do in this case when the Torah thinks that the Lova is being mishtamed? Rama Rachmana Shvua Ilayeh. The Torah says, you know what? We're going to impose a Shvua on you. And hopefully, at the end of the day, as a result of the Chiyuv Shvua, Kihechi Delo Dilei Bekule, he will confess, he will admit that he owes the entire sum. Michael, I'll get to your question in just a minute. It's just let me let it sink in. I'm not as brilliant as you are. You know, it takes me a while to let it sink in. Oh, so what happens over here? On the one hand, if he was an absolute thief, if he had no intention of paying back the loan, then Shvua would not help anything. Such a person who's unscrupulous and he steals, he'll take a false oath as well. But we're dealing with this middle case. It's not too much to this extreme. If he was a tzaddik gomor, he would have admitted the whole chov and let the law do what it has to do. If he was an absolute rasha, he would have denied the whole chov. We're in the middle category, the beini ubeini. We'll call it the Twilight Zone case. Here's a guy who's pressed for money. He really wants to pay back the chov. He's not a thief, but he doesn't have the money to pay it back. He's looking for a way of perhaps placating the Malva in such a way that he can admit at least part of it. The Malva will be happy to get at this point half. And in his own mind, he already has a due date in his mind. He's going to organize and arrange the payment. That's called Ishtamuti Kamishtamit. And the Torah says we're not going to tolerate such a thing. Because once he denies half the loan, and if we let him get scot-free, then eventually, who knows if he'll ever pay back the chov. You know, always give himself excuses that I still don't have the funds. And we have nothing over him because we let him out scot-free by telling him that he only has to pay 50 out of the 100. So what are we going to do? We want to make sure that he'll cough up an admission on the entire sum. So we impose a shvua. Why is the shvua meaningful? Because he's not that much of a liar and a thief that he would take a false oath. Once we impose the oath on him, he's going to say, oh, okay, I got it. I realized I had a plan, I thought it would work, but it doesn't work. So Michael asked me the following question, tell me if this is what you're asking, but maybe he knows this whole shtickle Torah, you know. He had, this is the old kasha migu. Migu means, well, if I was really lying, I would have put forth a better claim. Yeah, well, maybe he's putting forth a lower claim because he knows he has the migu, right? The old thing. So what happens here is that basically, the way I said it before, this ishtamuti kamishtamet is a psychological explanation to what's called a taina chashuva. Meaning that you might say, let's split the hundred, into 250s. And let's say the following. On 150, he was mode. Mode bakol. Here's your 50, take it and run. On the other 50, he's a kofra kol. And therefore, if he's a kofra kol, he doesn't have to take the shvur. What the ishtamuti kamishtamit svar is going to accomplish is that we integrate this 50 with that 50, and therefore the claim of the malve has been substantiated, at least b'miktas. Once we've established the substantiation, the evidence in favor of the malve on at least half of his claim, he has the right to force a shvua on the other half of the claim. So again, the ishtamuti kamishtamit is just sort of like in the background. It's not really up front. In other words, we don't have to, in every single case, ask ourselves, do we have reason to believe that he was ishtamuti kamishtamit? Maybe he's an ibrachacham and he's working this out, and because he knows it, and so forth and so on. But what we just have to accomplish is that the hodah on half is itself an indication that the Malva's claim is substantiated to some basis too. Says the Gemara, now we can understand Rabbi Chiya, Gabi Milva hu de'ikol meimar hachi. In the case of Milva, it makes sense to say that since the Lova was Moda on half the claim, therefore we have this whole fantastical svara to explain why he should take a shvur. But if, on the other hand, the lover denied the entire claim, then we have the svara of Eino de Meiz. He couldn't look the Malvin in the eye and say, I don't owe you anything. That lie is a very difficult lie for him to handle, and therefore he must be telling the truth, and therefore he's parted from a shvur. Aval gabi pikadon meiz u meiz. Now again, What does that mean, meis umeis? Let's understand it according to the Riva, because now we're big fans of the Riva. The Riva is saying, Gabi Pikadon, if he puts forth the tainis ptur of either ones or geneva, then he's meis umeis. Why? Because the mafkid doesn't recognize his lie. And therefore, if the malva doesn't recognize his lie, then the shomer has no support of ein other meiz to exempt him from a shvua, and therefore he has to take the shvua. That's called meiz umeiz. Basically, even the lover would have to take a shvua if it was meiz umeiz, just that the lover is ein other meiz. But in the case of the shomer, is putting forth a claim of ones, where there's no way, no how that the mafkid could have any clue that he's lying. In such a case, meiz umeiz, and therefore he has to take a shvua. So the svar of Rab Chia is that the pasuk of ki hu zeh is only going to be mechayev him a shvua when he's modeh b'miktsas. If he's modeh b'miktsas and he says, yeah, there were two cows over here, right? One cow is nenas and the other cow I owe you. I was responsible for that cow and I have to return it. That already gives support to the claim of the mafkid, correct? So in that case, the shomer clearly has to take a shvua. Okay, so let's talk about again the two categories of the riva. If the shomer denies the entire claim and he says, I never got a single cow from you, or I returned all these three cows, in such a case, meiz umeiz. And if it's meiz umeiz, then even though he was a kofer bakol, he has to take the shvua, because even a lover, if he was meiz umeiz, would have to take a shvua in kofer akol. When does Rav Chia insist that you need a modem and miktas? That's in the case of ein adam meiz, where we don't have the svar of ha'oza to support the claim of the shomer. For example, if the shomer puts forth a claim of tainas p'tur, and in that case, in order to substantiate the claim of the mafkid, we need a hodah b'miktas. Tani Rami Bar Chama Arba Shomrim. Now we're turning to Daf Kuv Zayin Amid Beis. Tzrichim Kfira b'miktas v'hodah b'miktas v'yeluhen shomachinim shol nosi socher v'hasocher. So according to this Brisa, which was quoted by Rami Bar Chama, we have the four cases of Shomer, and in each one of the cases, the Chiyuv Shvua is based on Ki Hu Zeh. Ki Hu Zeh means Hodah B'miktas and Kfira B'miktas. It means that this Brisa embraces the view of Rabbi Yochanan and rejects the principle of Eruv Parshios to claim that you only need a hodav and miktsas in the case of halva. No, we need a hodav and miktsas in order to generate a shvua, even in the case of the four shomrim. Amar Rav, my timer to Rami Bar Chama. Why is it that Rami Bar Chama in all four cases of shomrim requires a hodav and miktsas? After all, this pasuk that we read of ki uzeh is referring to a shomer chino. Maybe it's a special din in shomer chino. So v'shomer chino behejik siv bay, that's explicit in the pasuk. It says ki hu zeh, and that requires a hodah b'miktas. But shomer sachar, how do you know that? So the Gemara says we have a gzera shava between shomer sachar and shomer chinam. Yalif nesina nesina mishomer chinam. Just like in the case of shomer chinam, the Torah says here in pasuk vav ki yitain ish el re'ehu kesef okelim lishmar. So too in the next pasuk. Actually, it's three psukim late in Pasuk Tes. It says in the parash of Shomer Socha, Ki Yitain Ish El Reyehu. So we have Xer Shavav Nit Nesina Nesina. In both cases, you require a precondition to generate the Shvua, and that precondition is Hodah Kfir B'miktas Hodah B'miktas. What about Shoel? How do we know that the same applies to Shoel? And the Gemara says that in the case of Shoel, there's a hekesh, because immediately after the pasuk, which is pasuk tesi in this parasha, which is shomer sachar, it says ki yishal ish me'im re'ehu. Not only does it say ki yishal, but it says vichi yishal, and the vav is an extra letter, and a vav becomes like a hook. Actually, that's the literal translation of the word vav. Is vav is a not a hook? I don't know what you call it in English, but like the vav yamishkan, you know, that attach two things together. For lack of a better word, I'll call it a hook, but I'm sure there's a better word for it. And Mosif Halinyan Rishon, which means it connects it connects the Shoel to the previous parsha, which is the pasuk of Shomer Socher to require Kfira b'miktzas v'oda b'miktzas. What about Socher? So the Gemara says Socher is not a category unto itself. There are really only three categories. Because Socher has to be identified as one of two possibilities, which is a tremendous plugta, but doesn't matter for us today. If we assume that somebody who pays rent, since he gets the benefits of using the object, it's as if he's a Shomer Sachar, he's getting benefits from the object as opposed to a Shomer Chinam. It doesn't get any benefit, and therefore the Sachar has the same identical din as the Shomer Sachar, Einik Shomer Sachar, and then it's included in the Gzeir Shav of Nesina Nesina. Ve'i keman diyoma, leman diyoma, keshomer Chinam. If we assume that since the Sachar is paying rental fees, therefore it's considered like he's not getting any benefits from his Shmira, and therefore he's like a Shomer Chinam, Hainu Shomer Chinam, where the Torah says explicitly that you require a Kfira b'miktzas v'oda b'miktzas. The Omar Rab Chia Bar Yosef. Okay. This is the new part of the sugya. Hatoen Tainas Ganav b'pikadon. So we said that there are two categories of Gneva, of a ganav who pays kefil. One is a classical ganav who goes into someone's rishus, breaks in, and takes his cow. The other is a shomer who receives the cow willingly by the mafkid, but yet when the mafkid asks for the cow in return, the shomer says it was stolen. And he even takes a shvuah to that effect that it was stolen. Again, does he have to take a shvuah or not? That would depend upon the previous sugya. But in the case where he takes the shvuah, and then Adam come and testify that he perjured himself and he actually has the cow in his backyard, he should be chayev kefel. Says Rab Chiya Bar Yosef, no. Kefel, in the case of Toin Tanis Ganov, is conditional. What's the condition? Eino chayev at sheyishlach bo yad. You remember I pointed out at the beginning of our discussion today that there are another few words here in this parasha that seem to be totally out of place. Because when the Torah speaks about the nikra balabais el Elohim, which means that the mafkid can be tovea a shvua from the shomer, and on that it says that if he claims gneva, then shalom yishalom shnayim l'reyehu, he has to pay kefel. In the middle of that whole parasha, it says im lo shalach yado b'melech es reyehu. That's the parasha of shlichas yad v'pikadon. And that seems to be totally irrelevant here and out of place. Says Rab Chiya Bar Yosef, the Torah is stipulating a condition. When do we say shalom yishalom shnayim and the Toin Tainis Ganav pays kefel? That's only at sheyishlach bo yad. In other words, that Adam testify that he, the shomer, used the object illegally. That's a kind of a misappropriation. It's a kind of a chiyuv gzela. And therefore, once he's a gazlan, and the Adam testified to that effect, and then he takes a shvua that it was stolen, in such a case, he has to pay kefel. My timer, how do I know, Rab Chiya, that there is this precondition that he was sholech yad b'pikadon, then and only then does he pay kefel? Because it says in the pasuk v'nikra bal bayis el Elohim im lo shalach yado b'meleches re'ehu. When is he potur? When he takes a shvua and he did not, we have no edus, to the effect that he used the object for his own purposes. Michlal. The implication is that when is he chayav, in this case kefel, de ishalach bayad, then mechayav. L'memra, and the Gemara says that this is coming to teach us this pasuk, de bishalach bayad askina. That when does the Torah say that a Toin Tanis Ganav b'pikadon is chayav kefel? That's if and only if he was sholeach yad b'pikadon. And then he took a shvur sheker. So there's like a double avera over here. It's very complex according to Rab Chiya. Number one, his avera was that he was sholeach yad b'pikadon. That in and of itself would not generate a chiyuv kefel because that's a kind of a gzela. And number two, he took a shvua sheker to the effect that the object, the cow, was stolen. That in and of itself would not generate a shvua. But if we have A plus B, number one, there was a shvua sheker. And number two, there was a shlichas yad b'pikadon, the combination of this, you know, this tarte l'reisa, this A plus B avera, that's going to generate a chiyuv kefa. And Rabosai, as we move on, because we're going to soon see that there are many other shitas about this, I would have told you, just my own intuition, as we say in Yiddish, punkfaket, I would have said just the opposite. Logically, I would have thought that if he was a shalech yad b'pikon, he's not chayev kefel. And I'll tell you why. Because the very moment that he was shalech yad b'pikon, he's a gazlan. And it's his object. Now he goes ahead and takes a shvua on his own object. Why does he become a ganav? He's not. If the shvua itself, per se, is mechayev him a chiyuv kefel, because the shvua per se in a toin tanis ganav makes him into a ganav, that makes sense if he wasn't already a ganav, so to speak. But if he was already sholech yad v'pikadon, stop. At that moment, he has a din of a gazlan. I would have said it's his. He owns it, and he can never be chayv kefel for stealing something that's his. So what I find here is this statement of Rav Chiya bar Yosef, again, with all due respect to the way he reads the pasuk, and that I can't counter against that, but it seems counterintuitive. Instead of adding a second condition of shalach yad v'pikad in order to generate the kefel, I would have said the exact opposite. That the condition for kefel is that he wasn't shalach yad v'pikad. If he wasn't shalach yad v'pikad, then the pikad itself is in the reshus of the mafkid. Now he takes a shvuah to the effect that it was stolen, and he in fact through that shvuah is stealing the object, he should pay kefel. But if he's already achieved the geneva, then in such a gzela, I should say, to be more precise, by being shalech yad pikadon, because the din of a shalech yad pikadon is a ischayev v'toras gazlan, and therefore, for example, even if the animal gets hit by a bolt of lightning, he's going to have to pay for that, like any gazlan has to pay for onsim, then he can't be chayev kefel for stealing something that's already his. Halachically, he is the bailim of this object after he was shalech yad v'pikadon. And not only that, you know what, even on second thought, even when you read the pasuk, I'm not sure exactly if we have to read it the way Reb Chiya reads. It says, im lo shalach yodo b'mleches rayehu, meaning the first part of this parasha is telling you why and when the shomer is potter from tashlumen. And the answer is because he was not shalach yad b'pikadon. The second part of the parasha is to tell you when he's chayav, because the Edom testified that he stole the object after he had claimed that it was stolen. And in that case, there was no violation of Shlichas Yad B'Pikon. So even the Pasuk, Im Lo Shalach Yado, is not, in my humble opinion, a clear-cut proof for Rav Chiya. Amalahu Rav Chiya Bar Abba. Okay, now again, keep in mind, there are two different Rav Chiyas. It gets a little confusing. But whenever you see Rav Chiya bar Abba, you know he's a Talmud of Rav Yochanan, not the original Rav Chiya bar Yosef. And he claims, Hachi Omer Rav Yochanan, Be'omedes al avusa shanu. When do we say that the Shomer, because by virtue of his toin tainis ganov, he's chayev kefel, that's because the cow is sitting there in its place, avusa means when it's, you know, there's a yoke around it and it's eating from the grazing from the grass. In such a case, he was not shalech yad b'pikadon. Then he's chayev kefel, which is exact opposite of Rav Chiya bar Yosef. But the Gemara is not sure exactly what Rav Yochanan had in mind, but when he utilized this very strange kind of phrase, omedes al avusa. Amale Rav Zeira Rav Chiya bar Abba, you Rav Chiya brought this tradition in the name of Rav Yochanan. What did Rav Yochanan have in mind? Maybe as a Talmud you can clarify. Is it A or is it B? Dafka bo medes alavusa kamer. When is he chayv kefel? That's because he didn't touch the cow. The cow was being grazed over there. Avol shalach bayad. If he was shalach yad kana, the shomer now through this act of shlichus yad becomes a gazlan. He's chayv in onsim. The object now, the cow, is his, and therefore Shvua lo mahani be klum. The shvua is not an act of gneva to generate a chiyuv kefel because it's not his. It's already his. The Torah says that you're chayev as a gan of kefel because you stole something from someone else, from the mafkid in this case, but he already stole it through the act of shlichas yad pikadon. He's a gazlan and not a shomer. If he's not a shomer anymore, holding on as it were to the object that belongs to the mafkid, then he's not chayev kefel. And that's the way we understood Rabbi Yochanan. O Dilma, and here we'll finish up. Afilu o medes alavusa ka'omar. Rabbi Yochanan wanted to tell us that he could be chayev as kefil for one of two scenarios. In one of two scenarios, either if he was a sholeach yad v'pikadon, or even if he wasn't a sholeach yad v'pikadon. And the rest of the sugya is to try to clarify what Rabbi Yochanan had in mind. And this, in Mirtz Hashem, we'll pick up. Wish everyone a great Shabbos. David, can I borrow your pen again?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I have one, actually.
Yeah, exactly the opposite.
I just want to make a note of where we got to.
The Mitzvah motive of the says is, he knows the other guy, he knows he's lying, too.